It's my nerd world. Welcome to it. A Star Wars show. I like Star Wars. You like Star Wars. Let's talk about Star Wars. This week, Bad Batch Season 2, Episode 4. I'll share my thoughts. Mandalorian Season 3 trailer breakdown has me excited. Sequel trilogy context? Yes, please. Listener feedback. We'll dive into that as well. Talkshownerd at gmail.com is the email address. You can find out about all things My Nerd World at mynerdworld.net. Also your home for the Embark science fiction series. I wrote those books. They're available now. The audiobook for Battle Planet Book 7 is done too. I'll have details about that a little bit later on in the episode.
It's an instinct. Feeling. The Force brought us together. We're not alone. Good people will fight if we lead them.
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
But I do. I waited. And now, you're coming together. Is your undoing. Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny. The Force will be with you.
Always.
It's true. My Nerd World, a Star Wars show, and welcome to it. I'm your host, John Justice.
My Nerd World.
He's 16 now. I barely hear his voice in that. Thank you so much for checking out the episode again this week. How are things for you in a galaxy far, far away? Hope you're having a good start to 2023. I know that I am, mostly because it's no longer 2022. Want to talk about Star Wars this week? Got a lot to get into on this week's episode. Before we dive into the Bad Batch and the Mando season 3 trailer. Not a lot in terms of rumors this week. There was some new reporting, I should say more continued reporting, about, as I've been discussing on the show, the Damon Lindelof-led, written and directed by the Miss Marvel Disney Plus live-action show, Star Wars movie in the works. I don't want to say confirmation, but furthering the rumors of April at Star Wars Celebration Europe getting full details about this particular movie that should be released in 2025, December of 2025, including for the discussions over the ethnicity of the male and female leads of the movie. I don't care. Everybody's making a big deal about this. I just want a good Star Wars movie. The ethnicity of the actors is of no relevance to me, but of course, this is not the world that we live in anymore. This has to be the focal point of everything at this point in time. So the big news this week, or the news this week that was being discussed, was originally it was a female-led, then it was going to be male-led, and now we're being told that it actually is sort of a dual protagonist situation in this film that'll take place after the events of The Rise of Skywalker, and could bring about movies in 2026 and 2027 as well. So I imagine that we're getting pretty close to some sort of informal announcement with official details being given at Star Wars Celebration in London in April, as that's when it's being reported that the shooting of the film should start. So, with that being said, let's go ahead and dive into Star Wars we can actually watch right now on our televisions.
We are the spark that'll light the fire that'll burn the First Order down.
So what are you thinking about Bad Batch Season 2 so far? Are you enjoying it? Is it meeting expectations? Did you have any expectations? I know I didn't really have any expectations. I enjoyed Season 1 of The Bad Batch. I appreciated Season 1 of The Bad Batch being, well, an extension of the Clone Wars series in and of itself, wholly something different. I've enjoyed these first episodes of The Bad Batch. Episode 4 is no different. The show so far isn't really laying out anything in terms of depth. We haven't seen a ton of storytelling that lends itself to future storytelling or adding context to it. They really are just fun weekly adventures and tales about these core characters. Of course, in last week's episode, you had, you know, the focus of that particular episode being with Crosshair, not seeing any of the Bad Batch. In this particular episode, we only saw a few of the members of the Bad Batch in Faster. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for what it was. It was just a fun 25-minute Star Wars adventure. Nothing that deep. Just exciting episodic Star Wars. I know I want more Omega, however you want to pronounce her name. I want more Omega. I absolutely love that character. I appreciate the fact that they aged her up a bit in the episode, and I hope that we see more of that character even beyond the Bad Batch in the future, and we eventually, you know, we'll find out exactly where she ends up, as we talked about in previous episodes. Because of the timelines running together, these characters don't exist. They're either meeting grim fates, which I hope doesn't happen, or they end up in other parts of the galaxy where they're not involved in the storytelling that we all are aware of. I really appreciated the ode to pod racing. Initially, when the episode started, I was thinking that why didn't they just do pod racing? But the more that I thought about it, the more I was like, well, it makes sense because there are many different types of racing that exists now. And having a different form of racing really does, you know, lend itself to something unique and different. I just think it would be fun to see pod racing again, especially in animated form. I think that would be really interesting. But this was a fun episode. Ben Schwartz, who voiced the droid of one of the racers before he met his fate, which prompted Tech to have to take over, was a really exciting episode. I do hope we get more lore in the show. You know, I always appreciate when we get depth and context to other content. So hopefully we get that in future episodes. But didn't disappoint. Didn't really have any expectations going in. Just enjoyed it for what it was. Speaking of context, though, the Mandalorian Season 3 trailer is a whole different bag of wax. That's not how you say that. It's a whole different ball game. That's better. I'm going to do something I don't typically do. And I'm actually going to run through the shots, some of the shots, not every shot. There's a lot of shots. I'm going to run through some of the shots of the Mandalorian Season 3 trailer and then share with you a bit of my commentary. I really like this trailer. And it, while, I don't want to word this. On a first watch, I was like, that was good. But on rewatches and then diving into some of what is shown, I really started to get excited. So, the trailer opens up with a rocky ridge with a sunrise, perhaps a sunset, in the background. You see a group of figures walking in silhouette off in the distance. You hear Din Djarin's voiceover saying, "Our people are scattered." We then get a somewhat closer look at the figures and are beginning to make out that they are, in fact, dressed in Mandalorian armor. At this point in time, you hear Din say, "Like stars in the galaxy," he goes on to say, "what are we?" We get a closer look at this point in time of the Mandalorians. I really, really like the fact that while we've always had a really interesting mix, unless you're talking about Night Watch, the Mandalorians in and of themselves in the Coven, have always had an interesting mix of different armor. They really mixed it up, even within the individual coloring of a person, as opposed to having it match being a different color. The variation of the color schemes of the armor I thought was really, really striking, including some of the helmet designs, which echoed some helmets that we've seen in previous Star Wars content outside of The Mandalorian. Next, we get Din Djarin, the title character, obviously, of The Mandalorian, played by Pedro Pascal. He steps forward to take his place along the others in his creed. We get to see another shot of all the Mandalorians there. Din then says, "What do we stand for?" We then get a shot of Din's souped-up N1 starfighter speeding through hyperspace. And we get several shots of this throughout the trailer. We get some of Grogu sitting in his lap with the bubble dome still on the back where the droid would go. And then later in the trailer, we actually see that it's R5-D4 in there. I have my own theories as to why we're seeing that. We get a view of Din sitting in the N1 cockpit as the ship continues through hyperspace. From behind, we watch Grogu enjoying the experience of hyperspace travel as he sits in the bubble that, again, replaced the N1's droid socket. We get a reverse shot of Grogu with his mouth agape, sitting in that starfighter's bubble. Now from the front, the starfighter passes by the camera while still in hyperspace. And then we get the shot of Mando and Grogu both in the cockpit together. Looks as if Mando's actually sleeping at the time. Then you get a Din voiceover saying, "You also have to know how to navigate the galaxy." Then the N1 starfighter lands on the outskirts of Navarro City. You get shots of Mando and Grogu walking through the now colorful streets of Navarro. The voiceover says, "That way you'll never be lost." We have a bustling marketplace that can be seen in operation in the background. You get some shots of some familiar white protocol droids. You get the Kowakian monkey lizard laughing up in a tree, no longer in a cage or being roasted on a pike. We get Mando and Grogu enter what looks to be a town square, and this is where we see Greef Karga, the magistrate, dressed in even more elegant garb than we've seen him in the past. Just behind Karga, on his right, is a golden protocol droid that looks very similar to C-3PO, except for his head. Din and Karga grasp each other's wrists in greeting as Grogu looks on from his pram. In the background, you see a GNK power droid walking by, and the leg of the IG-11 statue that was established in Season 2, confirming that this is, in fact, Navarro City Town Square. Now, at the end of the trailer, you get a shot of Mandalorians firing in the city streets, and it's interesting because that IG-11 statue is actually gone. Then we get a shot of the N1 starfighter flying through a heavy rainstorm. Assumption here is that the Mandalorian, Din Djarin, is heading for Mandalore. You can actually see R5-D4 in the socket now with the bubble gone. Kind of jumping ahead in notes, my assumption here is that Din goes to Mandalore to regain his place in the Mandalorian culture, as stated in those episodes in the Book of Boba Fett, after it was revealed to the armorer that he had taken off his helmet and he was banished. And he needs R5-D4 to handle the navigation through hyperspace to get to Mandalore. We get a close-up of the armorer's ladle as it dips into what could be molten Beskar. A tool briefly ignites in flame as it hits the surface and then submerges. The armorer herself looks up from her work. Din speaks to the armorer. It appears as though they are standing in a cave with lights hanging behind them as they have the conversation. Din at this point in time says, "As I mentioned, I'm going to Mandalore." A bird's eye view of the Sundari, the now destroyed domed capital city of Mandalore, you can then see. This city's first appeared in much better shape in the Clone Wars animated series. Din says, "So that I may be forgiven for my transgressions." You then get a close-up of R5-D4's dome as he slides up into the N1 Starfighter's droid socket. I've mentioned this before. I'm going to mention again. I hope they solve the N1 Starfighter problem. And that is, you cannot fit a droid in that socket with his arms. If you look at the way that the N1 Starfighter is built, and I'm looking at my toy, my Hasbro Phantom Menace Anakin Skywalker used Naboo Starfighter. You cannot fit a droid in there because the shoulders don't fit in the hole. There's no space for them. So the only conceivable way that you could get a droid in there is from the bottom up, and his head would actually have to detach from his body. That would be deeper into the ship to make it work. I know that it's splitting hairs, but it drives me nuts because it doesn't work. It's the reason why, for those that don't know, it's the reason why in the Jedi Starfighter you see in Attack of the Clones, specifically Obi-Wan Kenobi's, but the ones that you see in Revenge of the Sith as well, the droid unit is off to the right of the center of the ship. Again, you cannot fit an entire droid in that socket. In the Clone Wars cartoon, they remedy this problem by moving the droid to the center of the ship where you can fit the entire droid in the socket. There's a similar problem, too. Maybe this is just all one big joke trolling the fans. But in the Force Awakens, when BB-8 is... when he goes up inside of Poe Dameron's X-Wing at the very start of the film, when he goes to meet Lor San Tekka on Jakku, you see a suction device come down, grab BB-8 by his head, and then pull him up into the ship. But then the next shot you see is BB-8 then going and coming up the top, which doesn't make any sense. The only thing that makes sense is if it pulls him up, brings him in, lets go of him, and then he gets pushed to the top again. I just, continuity stuff like that. I don't know how that gets past people. In the trailer, though, you can actually see R5-D4's head pop up into that port. So I'm hoping perhaps we'll get an explanation to that. Not the most important part of the trailer, but I wiped out anyways. We get a sweeping shot later on. So you go through these particular shots here. We do get a shot of Pelimoto, Amy Sedaris, one of her pit droids, wave goodbye to the N1 Starfighter. She says, may the Force be with you. You get Din Djarin saying, this is the way. The N1 zooms out of frame as fireworks go off above the settlement. This could be Mos Eisley Space Force, spaceport on Tatooine. Could be a completely different location. And then we get some shots of Grogu's hand flipping a switch in the Starfighter. Then we get a sweeping shot of the Coruscant skyline, and this is where things get interesting. This would be the first time we visited the planet, which was heavily featured in the prequel trilogy, in The Mandalorian. Of course, we went to Coruscant in Andor. Then you hear Carson Teva's voiceover saying, there's something dangerous happening out there. We get a shot of Dr. Pershing riding in the back seat of a speeder piloted by a droid through Coruscant traffic. Pershing was working with the client in the first season and was later captured by our heroes in season 2. His scientific specialty has been established as working with cloning technology. This is the new Republic captain, Carson Teva, who first appeared in The Mandalorian Season 2. On his left shoulder, you can see the insignia for the Rebel Alliance New Republic. He has a patch under his lapel. Not sure what it signifies, but it is the head of a Rancor. Carson Teva's voiceover continues. So first he says there's something dangerous happening out there. Then he says, and by the time it becomes big enough for you to act, it will be little too late. At this point in time, we're presented with a reverse shot of what we see before, and it shows the Mandalorian. It shows Din Djarin. But it's a different location. It's Din Djarin standing in the throw room hall on Mandalore. So they basically combine the Carson Teva shot with a shot of Din Djarin to make it seem as if he's talking to Din, but he's not. He's clearly talking to somebody else. Possibly another high-ranking member of the New Republic. Based on that information, you could even speculate that maybe it's Mon Mothma in this season in The Mandalorian. We just don't know. But clearly, Carson Teva is not talking to The Mandalorian at this moment. Now, I'm going to go back to this because this is important in terms of context as to what we may be seeing and what may happen in this season. We then see a dark green cave. Your guess is as good as mine, but my guess is it's probably the Mandalore mines, since we know that Din Djarin is heading there. You see a person uses a flashlight to examine a crusty, burned-out helmet caked in dust and rust. This could be what was left over from the Empire's Purge of Mandalore, Night of a Thousand Tears. We then get a quartet of Jedi wielding their lightsabers as the door burns open in the distance. This is likely a continuation of the flashbacks to Order 66 from Grogu's perspective that we saw going back to, these would have been the episodes from Book of Boba Fett, right? I think that's when we saw those. I don't think we saw those. It says here in the breakdown that I have here in my hand that was season two, but I'm pretty sure those took place in the Book of Boba Fett episode, specifically the one, but I could be wrong. Anyway, we'll get back to that in a moment. The chase continues. Then we get a squadron of TIE interceptors chasing what appears to be Bo-Katan's gauntlet starfighter. That's what it looks like, at least. The chase continues through a canyon divided by a channel of water. We get a closer look at the ship being pursued. This ship was first seen in the Clone Wars, also popped up in The Mandalorian Season 2. And in the initial teaser, we saw quite a bit of space action with Din's N1 Starfighter. So I'm happy to see that we're going to get some more vehicle action in the series. At least it looks like that's going to be the case. We then get a shot of what we can only guess is a droid bartender. With Mando's helmet in the foreground, sparks fly out of the droid's hand. Mando's reaction to the droid bartender, we can see B1 series battle droids from the prequel in the background as well, though it's out of focus. This is a really interesting shot, by the way, and its composition. You've got all the droids stop and turn to look at the camera at what appears to be an all-droid bar, flipping the script on what we saw in Star Wars A New Hope with the bar where the droids weren't allowed. You can see there's a lot of droids that are packed into energy sources or something similar. Again, there are battle droids, what looks like a clown-faced droid CZ-1 from the original Star Wars film, an RA-7 protocol Death Star droid, a couple of different astromech units. On the very right edge of the screen, there's an RX series pilot droid from Star Tours, which swivels his head in the shot. No idea where this is coming from. I mean, my guess would be Coruscant, but who knows? Mandalorian soldiers with jetpacks in the next scene drop from a ship onto Navarro City below them. Apparently some kind of fight breaks out there again this season. We then get a shot of two Anzellans. This would be the species of Babu Frick. We were told that Babu Frick would appear in the series as a Klatuonian falls in front of them. Then we get a shot of Grogu traveling through a darkly lit cave. Again, my guess would be these would be the Mandalorian mines that we mentioned earlier. He's by himself in his hover pram from behind. As Grogu reaches the exit of the cave, a reptilian ape-like creature with four eyes jumps into frame to block his escape. You then get another Din voiceover saying this is the way. The creature is thrown to the ground underneath a rocky overhand by an unseen force, pun intended. In a jump cut, it's revealed who threw the creature as he emerges from the shadows. Of course, it's Grogu wielding the force. And then we get the Season 3 logo and premiere date. Now, on the Disney Plus version of the trailer, there is one extra shot. This extra shot is in place of the text shot in the trailer that was shown on YouTube. It's a shot of a derelict Imperial Star Destroyer. And as a matter of fact, there are several Star Destroyers in this shot lined up. They're either being built or they're being worked on. The article goes on to say, what looks to be either Coruscant or Corellia, you see two figures watch from the foreground in silhouette. One of them, to me, I immediately thought it was Dr. Pershing, but I could be wrong. It's interesting to see the context of what Carson Teva was saying in his dialogue, with the implication being that the Empire is in the process of staging a return. This could also possibly be the dismantling of these Star Destroyers. I think there's also an argument, and without knowing what the context is, I think, too, you could be seeing the first signs of the First Order. Maybe perhaps these Star Destroyers get their start here before they're shipped off to somewhere else. We, of course, saw fleets of Star Destroyers at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, only to have the Death Star-style guns placed on the bottom of them. If we're speculating, might be kind of interesting to see the Star Destroyers built here before they're sent off to Exegol to have the added armament attached to them in what we would see in The Rise of Skywalker. So, what do we know from the trailer? So let's get into some of this here. Typically, what we see in these trailers, what we know from the past, is usually you only see content from the first few episodes. Mando meets with the Armorer, decides he's going to go to Mandalore to regain his Mandalorian status that he lost after he removed his helmet in the Book of Boba Fett. Again, you have R5-D4 needed for travel in hyperspace. Bo-Katan is going to be the foe in the series, but not the villain. She wants the Darksaber. She knows at some point she's going to have to fight Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, to get it. So I think you're going to see her being an antagonist, but not a villain. We know that Moff Gideon is returning to the series, and apparently he's going to have a helmet. We know there are going to be some Praetorian guards that will make an appearance at some point in time as well. Getting to the flashback with the Jedi, this is probably, again, another shot of Order 66. The shot in the trailer looked like it was lifted right from the production of the Kenobi series. Somebody did a side-by-side of the previous... I guess it was season 2 of The Mandalorian now. It was not the Book of Boba Fett. It was the Ahsoka episode, now that I'm thinking about it. The Ahsoka episode that showed a bit of what took place on Coruscant with Order 66 and Grogu. So my guess is this is another flashback of that scene. Most likely Darth Vader, pre-armor, from the end of Revenge of the Sith, after Order 66, is on the other side of that door. That's my guess. So hopefully in season 3 we end up finding out who exactly ended up saving Grogu. Most people, including myself, are thinking that's going to be kind of a big deal, that it will be a significant Jedi that would end up rescuing Grogu in Order 66, and the fact that they included this particular shot would begin to sort of tell me that this is where we're going. Not only do we potentially have interaction between Darth Vader, played by Hayden Christensen. So we know that Hayden Christensen is going to appear in the Ahsoka series, and I would imagine you have him coming through the door. He's in his hood, as he was in Revenge of the Sith, and we get to see how Grogu makes his escape. This is what's most interesting to me about the trailer, before we get to your listener feedback this week, and that is Dr. Pershing, Coruscant, the Star Destroyers, because we've already been told by Dave Filoni that the Mandalorian is going to show the beginnings of the First Order. Now, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out with the Ahsoka show and the search for Thrawn. A lot of people are guessing that we'll see some sort of larger threat from Thrawn, as in the books that are no longer canon, he had his own fleet. I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, clearly Thrawn had a fleet when you go back to Rebels, but in this instance, Thrawn could be anywhere at this point in time with Ezra without any sort of armament or military around him, unless Thrawn is somehow also tied to the beginnings of the First Order. What I'm really hoping for is the context that relates to the sequel trilogy. I really want Grogu and the desire from the first season and the continued interest from Moff Gideon in Grogu to be the secret sauce that Palpatine wants so that he can rise to power and bring about the First Order. I hope that they are going to use this to add further context to Snoke and cloning. I think that would be incredible. I love the sequel trilogy. I'll get into a bit of this coming up with listener feedback. And to me, adding context to lines like somehow Palpatine returned, the Mandalorian season 3 could show us that, at least the beginnings of, well, how did that happen? I think those Star Destroyers in the trailer are pointing towards that in some way. As I mentioned before, Dr. Pershing, his sole purpose in the show is to get the blood from Grogu. We already saw in season 2 that the Empire was working with something as it related to what we assume is cloning, with the individuals behind in water on that Imperial base. So I'm all for bringing about context for the sequel trilogy and further further explaining the rise of the First Order. I am so excited for The Mandalorian Season 3. These next 5 weeks cannot go by fast enough. As always, what do you think? TalkShowNerd@gmail.com or leave a comment on YouTube.
I need someone to show me my place in all this.
All right, got a couple of emails to share with you this week. First one comes from Kabuki. Responding to my The Greatest Love Story Star Wars Ever Told episode from several months ago, writes, I want Rey to come back. It's really selfish of some who wish they wouldn't. As a sequel fan, we have to bear the hate of the sequels already. Sequel haters are way too entitled. Thank you for the email, Kabuki. So, N. Blackie wrote, and there's a couple of emails here because I responded to one of them, but I wanted to share them with you. They had written the week prior. I felt that the email was a little bit negative. I wasn't really in the mood to get into it, and therefore I skipped over it. They responded to that, and I appreciate the response, and here's what they had to say. As I was talking last week about wanting the next Star Wars movie to be magical and how I was moved emotionally by the end of the Foundation science fiction series in a way that the sequel trilogy hadn't really moved me. I didn't really take that as me digging on the sequels. It was me just saying that that particular show moved me, and I hope the next Star Wars movie does that. This is what N. Blackie had to write, saying, the fact that you admitted that Star Wars hasn't moved you emotionally in a long time, including the sequels, is a huge admission on your part. Let me stop here. It has moved me. It just didn't move me in as much as the Foundation finale did. I was definitely moved by the end of The Rise of Skywalker. But watching the Foundation recently, I don't recall being moved quite as much. I just want to point that out. Anyway, N. Blackie goes on to say, and you really nailed the crux of the problem. Outside of Rogue One and Andor, Disney-era Star Wars has little emotional weight to any of it. I'm sorry if my comments come across as too negative. I'm just really frustrated and sad with what's happened to Star Wars. If I can point to the one time they really hit the mark with the emotional heavy storytelling, it's during the Battle of Scarif in Rogue One. The part where the plans come over just seconds before the Death Star enters the atmosphere and sends down a ray of destruction that General Raddus can only watch in silent awe. Then solemnly says, Rogue One, may the Force be with you, knowing that none of them will survive and that none of them even know if their efforts are in vain. It's Star Wars done to near perfection, in my opinion. I want to see Star Wars mean something again, but I would be lying if I said the rumors surrounding Lindelof's films didn't worry me. You know, and to that, and I'm glad that you said, in your opinion, that's fantastic. It is all subjective, and people are moved by different things. I know for me personally, I was very much touched during the finger touch and loving scene from The Last Jedi, and I still am. I love that romance, doing that thing with my fingers, because it's not romance in your traditional sense, right? That we got between Kylo Ren and Rey, and especially that kiss at the end of The Rise of Skywalker. And there's other moments as well. To that, like the moments that you mentioned from Rogue One, those didn't impact me nearly as much as the ones that I just mentioned or other scenes that I could mention, specifically from The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. I think of the three sequel trilogies, like the least emotional of them would be The Force Awakens, even though I love that film as well. So I replied to N, you know, and said that, you know, sort of clarified my comments as I did here. And then they wrote back and said, I know you love the sequels. You've been consistent with that. I respect the way you stand by them and defend them. But Star Wars fans deserve to have the emotional weight that other content out there seems to be able to deliver to their fan bases. There are a few gold nuggets to be found, like in Rogue One and Andor, and even for a brief second in Obi-Wan Kenobi, where he splits Vader's mask to reveal what remains of Anakin. But there is so much more filler in those moments, they don't hit the way that they should. like in a show like Game of Thrones, where so much of the emotional impact is earned. That doesn't happen in Star Wars these days. It always feels lazy and half-assed. I should be fair and say some of the Mando hits hard, too. Just overall, it's not there. And again, you know, I think we're talking about things that are subjective, because I'm sure that I could get responses from people listening to this show that would say that those particular moments you mentioned didn't have any emotional weight to them, while these other ones that they have did for them. One more quick comment on this, and I don't mean to push back too much. I really do appreciate the comments, but this idea that, let me get back here it again. Star Wars fans deserve to have the emotional weight that other content out there seems to be able to deliver to their fan bases. I personally wouldn't use the word deserve. I mean, I don't deserve anything. I mean, I don't, and I'm not saying you do, and I'm just talking about, and I'm splitting hairs here, but it's, to me, it's not a matter of deserving. For some people, it probably does. And that's the difficult thing about creating content. And as somebody that has to do a 3-hour show every day, it's not an easy thing to do from that standpoint. All that I can do with my radio show every day, or this podcast, or my Depeche Mode podcast, is talk about the things that matter most to me, to be as genuine and as authentic as I can possibly be, so that even if you don't agree with me, you're at least getting the emotional, I'm putting forward the emotional weight of what it means to me, and therefore, hopefully it makes it interesting. I approach my own radio show that way. I have no idea what the audience wants to hear on a daily basis. I drive myself mad if I tried to appease the listener by guessing what the thousands of individuals want to hear. I have a box that I work in with cut topics and content. But at the end of the day, all I can do is talk about the things that matter to me the most to make that content the most interesting that it can be. I firmly believe that all the Star Wars creators attempt to go and do that. It lands for some people. It doesn't land for other people. For some people, Kenobi landed for them. They thought it was amazing. For me, I thought it was weak. And it's one of the few pieces of Star Wars content that I actually kind of find myself having a hard time watching. I tried to go back and watch it again the other day, and I'm like, I'd rather go and watch something different. But that's just Kenobi. I'll go watch The Mandalorian over and over and over again. I'll choose The Rise of Skywalker, The Last Jedi, and The Force Awakens before I'll go and watch Return of the Jedi. Lastly, friend of the show, SheVP, says this: I was just thinking over the holidays, whatever happened to being able to go to the store and buy great Star Wars toys? I remember when Toys R Us had a whole section of the store that was just Star Wars. The prequel era was really amazing. Yeah, it was. Now, most of the really cool stuff is very expensive, and I'm on a wait list. And this is going to be a long before the pandy. I don't know what that means. Anyway, even Disney can't do Lucas in the merchandise department. Yeah, one of the things that I really enjoy doing is there's a few of them, but on Pinterest, which I had no idea you pin your interest Pinterest. On Pinterest, there are Pinterest pages that are actually devoted to old Star Wars toy ads, and they're amazing. I love looking at that. I have pictures saved on my phone and on my computer of toy displays from Empire Strikes Back specifically that are just absolutely amazing. Seeing the old logo, seeing shelves just stocked full of those toys, absolutely love it. So thank you, everybody, for the comments this week. And Black E, I appreciate your comments as well. And enjoyed the back and forth on that. I really did. It'll be interesting to see what Disney is able to put out in terms of Star Wars content. Without knowing what the details of the story is for this next film, it's hard for me to even sort of say I'm cautiously optimistic for anything at this point in time. We're going to have so much distance from the sequel trilogy and so much controversy that's taken place since then, whether it's because of the live action content, whether it's continued fallout from people's opinions of The Rise of Skywalker and The Last Jedi. I'm very curious to see what Disney ends up doing with a new film. I really don't know what direction they're going to go or how they're going to handle it. I mentioned in a previous episode that I'm glad they're apparently taking their time. You look at a film like Avatar: The Way of Water, and there's no reason why a Star Wars film can't be that same type of wondrous spectacle, but that remains to be seen. All right. I hope that you will help support my nerd world, especially if you're a reader. You obviously like science fiction. Check out my science fiction series, Embark. 7 books in all in the series. Great for ages 11 and up, but written for adults. If you like your science fiction space opera to be epic and filled with a romance and action. And my series, whether you're a military science fiction fan, a science fiction fan, or a space opera fan, or an apocalyptic, you know, post-apocalyptic fan, if you're watching The Last of Us and you like those types of tales, book one certainly fits into that. Book one is a bit of a mashup between a science fiction, a story, a space opera story, and an apocalyptic tale. The audiobook for book 7 is complete. It's up on Audible. I'm just waiting for them to approve it and make it available to anybody, which could be any day now. So if you've been waiting for the audiobook for Battle Planet Book 7, the last book in the series, it's done. I'm just waiting for Audible to approve it. And if you're a part of the mailing list, you'll get an email as soon as that's available for purchase. The description for Book 1 in the series is as follows. Katha's father died 1 year ago, and yesterday he gave her the key to saving humanity. She just doesn't know it yet. In Embark Book 1, which is available in ebook right now for just 99 cents, the stars are within reach as rival mega corporations, D-Corp and Entercon, have made interstellar travel possible and spaceflight available to the masses. But when an industrial accident inside D-Corp sets off an apocalyptic chain of events, all of Earth is at risk. Meanwhile, Katha Morrow receives a cryptic message from her late aerospace engineer father, leading her and fellow pilot Taft Guardia to a shocking discovery. Spoiler alert, Taft Guardia has a thing for Katha. But excitement turns to fear as the global evacuation begins and Katha realizes the significance of what they found. While the ruthless Sin-Argum of D-Corp attempts to exploit the disaster, it's up to Taft, Katha, and a ragtag squadron of pilots to save Earth's evacuees from the tyranny of D-Corp's evil leader. Head on over to Amazon.com, search for Embark, John J. Owen Justice, or MyNerdWorld.net. That's where you can pick up the book. Ebooks are all priced to sell. The first book in the series is only 99 cents. All the other ebooks are $2.99. You can pick up the trilogy, the opening trilogy in the 7-book series, at a discounted price of $3.99, so you get a discount on that. They are all available in ebook, paperback, hardcover, and audiobook. Again, Amazon.com or MyNerdWorld.net. Thank you so much for checking out the show this week. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did recording it. I'll be back again next week. Until then, I hope wherever you are happy, that you're healthy, and that you're safe. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
The Force will be with you. Always.
My Nerd World.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it?